All right. There we go. It's another,
here we are.
Another, I was going to say season.
Season.
A new episode of the Gen X Guys. The inconsistent Gen X guys who have been on and off over the last 2 months. So I feel bad for these kind of what Gen X did, right?
We don't care enough. We just kind of do whatever, whenever.
Well, it's that type of year when you try to do trips before the heavy summer when everybody does trips so you can kind of get the cheaper deals.
Yeah, no, that's true.
You know, and that's came back from a cruise, so that was fun. Mm. You know,
where'd you go again? What was the stops at?
So there were two stops. One was Ensenada, and the other was Catalina Islands.
Never been to Catalina Islands. How was it?
It was nice. Nice little town right there, Avalon, right off Catalina Island. So it's like 20 miles west of Huntington Beach and stuff like that, somewhere down there in Southern Cal. So it was fun. Fun part was they had a banner hanging up saying Catalina Wine Mixer coming May, the 9th annual Catalina Wine Mixer. I was really bummed.
You get your nut.
I missed it. I was so bummed. That was one of the exciting parts when we first booked this. Like, dude, Catalina, there's got to be a wine mixer.
Right.
And there is, but it's in another week.
You missed it. You didn't get me able to do your helicopter.
No, couldn't hit my quota. So, you know, it just didn't happen for me. Exactly.
How many helicopters do you have to run? 22 or something like that?
I don't know. Something like that. For those who don't know what we're talking about, the movie Step Brothers. It's a big ending scene about the Catalina wine mixer.
Yeah. So,
if you haven't seen it, check it out. Especially if you're listening to us. It would make sense to check that out.
What are you saying?
Pow.
Pow?
Yeah. I know.
It's a fun movie to watch.
It is.
It's one of those movies that you'll turn on and like you can have it on in the background. And then you know, it's like Wedding Crashers, right? Mm-hmm. Like you'll play it and you'll kind of watch it, but then like you know a part's coming up, and so that you'll purposely make sure you go over and watch it.
Yeah.
Or then you know you're supposed to be doing something and just sit down and watch the whole thing.
Yeah, agreed. Yeah, unless it's on TV, like local TV, radio cable, then they throw commercials in, just cuts the whole thing off. The whole feeling at that point is done. So I move on.
Especially like Wedding Crashers, like the whole first half of it, there is no like low part or slow part, right? It's just this constant. There's always something going on with it. We'll have to do that. We'll have to bring up. We'll have to do an episode where we do just be prepared and go over all our favorite movies,
sure,
in the different genres. Because you know, you don't put Wedding Crashers and Shawshank in the same category. You don't really. They're not really that comparable.
Well, yes. One's an Academy Award nominee and winner. One of them was not considered unjustly because apparently they don't take comedies fairly at there in the Oscars.
Even though, you know, the weird one that, you know, they say that I always thought was weird, and I love her performance in it, but Marissa Tomei won Best Supporting Actress in a movie.
My Cousin Vinny. Yeah.
And not to say that her performance wasn't great, but was it Academy Award winning? I never understood that pick. I know everybody gives her credit, and I'm not taking it away from her, but it's just one of those ones where you're like, how is that Academy Award winning? It wasn't that deep. She played herself.
Dude, what are you talking about? She knew a lot about cars.
You know, the thing is, though, I there's a theory. I kind of came up with my own theory, and probably somebody else did too.
Okay, let's hear this.
Her and Vinny met when Vinny was a mechanic. So Vinny was a mechanic just like her, because remember, he was the one who came to the conclusion of it being a different car before she did. He had to tell her or lead her to come to that conclusion by looking at those pictures. So everything that she said, and again, not saying that, you know, she didn't know cars or anything, but she knew about, like, you know, the trick question in the beginning about the timing on the 64 Bel Air, you know, that type of thing, right? Or the 54 Bel, whatever car he tried to trip her up on. And then everything about, you know, the GM paint and all of that, the Positrac, he knew all that stuff before she did.
Okay. So he was
the one who actually thought of it.
And?
Yeah, just a stupid theory.
I'm trying to...
Was
it a theory or more of a fact? Like, if you know he knew it, it's less a theory.
no, about that. Like they met when he was a mechanic in like her dad's shop or something.
Oh, you think they met when he was a mechanic?
Yeah. It means nothing. It's kind of stupid that I
interesting,
but it's what pops in my head.
There you go.
Well, yeah, nothing else going on. You know, shit like that. Random things just pop in.
Exactly. Just and wandering. It's totally
random. Like I said, it means nothing. It takes away nothing from her knowledge of cars. And you know, it's funny. I've seen people in comments say things like, "Do people actually know that much about cars?" And I'm like, "Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Your dad was one of them."
Yeah, there are a lot of people who know that much about cars to that level.
Yeah. To that level, yeah. Especially the older cars, because it was so different back then. You know, it was all the cars were essentially the same with just minor differences. You know, in reality, they all worked pretty much exactly the same. But like, you know, Ford had this distributor in the front and Chevy had it in the back, I think is how it was. Yep. But, you know, it was little differences like that. But
yeah
people agreed. Back then, you know, those boomers knew their cars.
Well, your dad definitely did. That's true. The boomers, and then the generation before that was the one first working on them.
Yeah,
the boomers were still relatively young at that point.
True, that's true.
So
yeah, your dad was he would have been in his 20s in the 60s.
In the 60s, yeah, in his 20s.
I can't imagine your dad in his 20s.
Well, there you go. Okay,
yeah. You know. You're gonna have that.
You're gonna meet him until he was in his 40s. So,
yeah.
So that makes sense.
Yeah, maybe 30s, 40s, but still,
so it was 40s. Yeah, it was his 40s. I'm almost certain.
No.
And you met my mom. That's why, because my dad was always.
You know, working. I probably never. You're, that's a good point. I don't think I actually met your dad until high school.
Correct. Exactly.
Yeah.
So. Anyway,
a good point. I never thought of that.
Yeah.
Holy
so
shit.
Going down memory lane, that's fantastic. So speaking of crazy things, let's talk about the draft. Okay. Wow. The NFL draft happened.
Insurrection.
Well, yeah, considering you mentioned like just out of the blue comments. I figured out of the blue is like the pick that the freaking Falcons made with Penix Jr. out of the blue. What's your thoughts? Here's my thing. I've heard plenty. I mean, obviously,
the draft is ongoing. I don't agree with it. I think it's just one of those things where so many players are now starting like year one, year two at the most. Like, you know, Mahomes came in after a year sitting on the bench, and he even said it benefited him, you know, gave him that time to actually like be able to hit the ground running in the NFL. And then, what's Houston's quarterback's name?
What are you talking about, Strauss?
Yeah, Strauss.
Yeah.
CJ. I mean, he came in and did it. And so, you know, that philosophy of him needing to sit and wait 2 to 3, 4 years, I think people have a problem with. But it's just crazy that they pulled Cousins, gave him a 4-year contract, and then they did that. I think people are fixated that they're saying that, you know, he was a bad draft pick at that rate. And I don't think that's the case. I think it's them drafting a quarterback at 8. It was crazy.
Well, I think it's a couple of things, right? And both your points, right? So first one, yeah, just drafting him a quarterback at all for Atlanta, who just gave a 4-year deal to Cousins with $100 million guaranteed.
Yep.
Just made no sense, especially in the top 10. Like, you want a player who's going to start. And that's been the big thing I've heard from a lot of people, which is true. You want a player who will start. You don't want – you've just paid for a massive quarterback deal, so you're not in the need for a quarterback, at least not that high. And so the fact that they picked a quarterback that they know they're probably not going to play for 2 to 3 years with the 8th pick in the draft on a quarterback who's already 25 makes no sense. Plus, they have a quarterback coming off a major injury, Cousins, and they just drafted a kid out of college who's had major surgeries for most of his college career, has had major injuries. And so... Again, doesn't make sense. It didn't even look like the owner was on board with it from the video they showed.
Oh, yeah.
The GM had to explain to him why they went that route. But as far as Penix Jr. being picked in general,
like, I don't have a problem with it.
I don't, but I don't think he should have been picked that high. Like, again, top 20, yes. I mean, most quarterbacks are going to go top 20. But that's the surprising part. Atlanta could have traded back and still gotten him.
Yeah.
And probably picked up a couple picks. And then... probably would have had a better opportunity to build a team, but no, that was just dumb. Straight and simple. There is no logic behind that they can justify. That is the dumbest thing. And those guys will be fired within two seasons. The GM will be gone.
Again, I think across the board, I think that's the whole thing. It's not that it's – was he picked a little bit too high? Yes. You know, then you have that, you know, should you let him sit? Yeah, because you could say Jordan Love. But Jordan Love, they thought Rodgers was going to retire 2 to 3 years before that. So I don't think that they thought that there was going to be this 3 to 3 years of him sitting. And yeah,
they never thought Rodgers was going to retire. They just thought he was finally long in the tooth and was starting to lose his touch. And then he won two back-to-back MVPs.
Yeah. I don't know. I've heard a lot of things more about him retiring. But anyway, but it's still the point. It's like, I think you can nitpick each part of what the Falcons did.
Yeah.
And you can justify each part. It's as a whole what they did that you're like, you know, was he picked a little high? Maybe. You know, I think he was on that cusp of, you know, probably about as high as he should go. But you also had Cousins, and then, yeah, it just was one of those weird things where it's just like, it's just really questionable. I mean, obviously, you know, Cousins doesn't have that many more years. I think he's going to be 36 coming into this year, or 37.
Correct, yeah, 35, 36, somewhere around there.
Somewhere around there, yeah. But regardless, you know, Brady is an anomaly. You can't expect somebody to play well into their at 40.
Well, so Aaron Rodgers is in his 40s, and he's playing well. Granted, he got knocked out four plays in.
Is he 40 yet?
He is 40, yeah.
Is he going to be 40 this year?
Yeah, he's 40.
Fuck, you know what? You see, hearing shit like that now makes me feel even worse about the way that I let my body go. Because, you know, these professional, of course, they're professional athletes, but I'm also not taking the pounding that they get.
He turns 41 this year, so he's 40.
Holy shit, I didn't realize he was that old.
Don't forget, Drew Brees left when he was 40. More quarterbacks are playing into their 40s now, or just that's at crazy. 40. So,
I did not realize he was that old.
Yeah.
I mean, it makes sense, but it just, because, I mean, he's been, you know, a full-time starter for a long time now, and he sat for
3 years after Brett Favre, right? Yeah, 3 years in. Same concept. To your point, like I've always said, Bill Walsh was a big one who stated this in the past. Like, for any rookie QB coming in, the best thing a team can do is make him sit at least a year.
Yeah.
And the reason, and they can, what they want to do is put them in position and bring them in when they have the opportunity to be successful. So, yeah. Like, if your team's up by 20, bring them in. Let them start playing like the final fourth quarter or something so they see success and know that they win. Whether or not they contribute is irrelevant. The point is they're getting into that culture. And then when they take over, they have that mentality, that mindset, versus just throwing them out there. I mean, a lot of nowadays in the draft, and this was, I was just thinking about this earlier. I never cared about the draft. In the 80s, I didn't care. I didn't care who we picked. I don't even remember.
We didn't. It was too hard to follow college football without the internet.
Well, I just, yeah, that's true. But I also didn't care about the draft. And they were televising it, I think, back then too, on ESPN. But I never cared.
Right.
Even in the mid-90s, I think it's when I finally started to show some interest in seeing who we drafted.
Right.
In the papers, yeah, I'd know who we drafted. Like when we drafted Jerry Rice and others at the time. Sure, I'd see it in the newspaper. I didn't care.
Yeah.
And even now, I care less. Or obviously, I care more than I did in the 80s because I still keep an eye on it for the first round. But I care as less about the rest of it. You know, like, I don't care.
You
like,
never know.
No. But it's funny how the draft has become so big now that, I mean, the NFL's getting like huge bids by cities just to get that draft in their city.
After they left New York, yeah.
Yeah, and it's shown successful. So now all the cities are bidding for it, just like a Super Bowl.
I mean, think about like that, the one right before the pandemic hit with Las Vegas. That was supposed to be this huge spectacle. Remember, like, they were going to do the Bellagio. It was going to be over to the water area.
It was all there.
Yeah. But I'm just saying, it was supposed to be this huge, like, almost like F1 type event for Las Vegas. And, of course, it didn't really pan out that way because of the pandemic, but still.
No.
I'm talking about the 2020. No. I'm talking about the 2020. That's when
they came to Vegas. It was huge.
Yeah.
I was there. I went there. I'm not sure. Maybe you're getting confused with another city, but Vegas was huge. It had a massive turnout.
Wait. Didn't in 2020 they were supposed to do it in Vegas, weren't they?
Dude, I don't remember when the draft was. I don't think it was 2020 though. But regardless, even still, the point is the draft here was, because since I live out here, this was the first time I ever went to it. It was fantastic. I mean, massive crowds. They had the Bellagio. They shut down part of the strip. It was great.
It was supposed to be, it was supposed to be
in Vegas. 2022, dude. Get it right. No,
2020, it was supposed to be in.
Oh, you're saying it was canceled or pushed out by your. Oh, I see what you mean. Yeah. Okay. Why don't you lead with that, dumbass?
I said it was supposed to be. What the fuck did, what does
I
that mean?
I didn't hear
it was
supposed to be. All you said was it was supposed to be this big spectacle. You didn't say it was supposed to happen in 2020.
I might even go back because I know what I meant to say. That's all that matters.
I know what I meant to say. I know my truth. I know what you're. No, you're right. In that case, yes, it was. They pushed it, and then they had to wait a year after the next one in 2021. So it came out here in 2022.
Okay. Right.
All right. Good. We got that aligned now. Thank you.
But yeah, but the point is, it's become a big spectacle.
Oh yeah, easily. Yeah. Easily, it's massive. So
well, it's like everything with the NFL, though.
True, dude. They even have the NFL schedule as a big TV event coming up in like when they release the NFL schedule. I'm like, I don't give a shit about that. I really don't. I don't care. I'll read the next day on ESPN when the schedules are released that, oh, this is who we're playing. Yeah. Big deal. I don't need to know that they're going to Brazil the first week of the NFL season. It's like, okay, that's great.
I was
not
so
going
glad
to Brazil. Neither do I care about those two teams.
The Browns was one of the teams that might have played against the Eagles that week. Like there was speculation that the Browns were going to be with the Eagles. I'm so glad it happened. Not like I didn't think it was going to happen because I didn't think it was that big of a draw to have those teams playing against each other. But
no,
I said that first. So you don't have to act like,
whoa,
you
know, I'm agreeing with you. I'm not saying that you're wrong.
But yeah, but I mean, even the when they do the UK one, when they go there or Germany.
Oh, play over in London? Yeah.
That's something that I understand, but they have to plan those schedules more around that. You know, make sure that, you know, teams aren't at a disadvantage by having to do that amount of travel. I mean, of course, they're traveling, you know, better than we would travel. But still, even like the Thursday night games. If they want to, like, worry about player health, they should get rid of Thursday night games. I know, because it's a big moneymaker.
They actually have a Wednesday night game this season coming up. I think it's
as long as they put the schedule right. I think that if you have a Thursday night game, you should not play the Sunday beforehand. If they really care about player safety, it should be like that Thursday should be after their bye.
But how would you pull that off? Then they'd have to play back-to-back Thursdays.
No. What I mean is not play on the Sunday, then play on the
Thursday.
What
day would they play?
And then the next Sunday they would play.
Right, but what day would they play? Are you saying a bye? They'd have to have a
bye. I'm saying they would only do Thursday nights after the bye game.
Oh, okay.
The only time they could do it is after the bye week. Because the thing is, players have all upset.
I like that. That makes sense. But unfortunately, you know that's not.
I'm not saying it's not complicated. I'm not saying it's not. There's not issues with it. But I'm just saying when they talk about player safety, it's bullshit. Because that's one where players are saying that, you know, they go into games and they're still sore from the Sunday game. You know, they're still.
Oh yeah,
they're still
totally understandable too. Yeah, they don't have any real recovery period. I agree with you.
That's but interesting. Also, it means that the product on the field isn't as good either.
No Thursday night game is good.
Yeah,
it sucks.
It really does.
Yeah, and they know it too. And Amazon has control of that.
It gets. I think they got to put some regulation on that stuff because that the whole streaming thing is becoming ridiculous. I mean, it's bad enough.
It's getting more interesting because NBA apparently is looking to do a deal with Amazon.
Yeah, because they know that it's making money.
Yeah.
It brings the money for them.
Correct. They get paid billions of dollars for the TV rights. They don't care if people have to pay for it. I'm sure they put some agreements in place that you have to offer. Like, we want to make sure fans can get opportunities to get to it, so you have to offer X amount. But yeah.
What kills me is I've bought Sunday ticket since 1999. I got DirecTV.
How many times Blue Browns been to the playoffs since you bought that?
That's irrelevant. I love football.
I think
that's the only reason why
you love it, but you love the Browns, and they're getting it specifically so you can watch every Brown loss every year.
They were in the playoffs last year. That's all that matters.
Okay, cool.
What has your team done lately?
So how many times is what all my question was?
It doesn't matter. Last year they made the playoffs.
Sure.
Like that's two someone times who in the last can't 4 years.
Answer the question because
two
they don't
times
want
in
to.
The last 4 years.
Okay.
That's how, all that matters.
Prior to that.
It doesn't matter. How far back do you want to go? See, that's the whole thing. You want to go back to 99? I mean, you
let's
know.
Let's go back to the expansion year. Let's go back to the expansion year.
No.
When the expansion Browns came in.
So anyway, but I pay all that money every year for Sunday Ticket to get all these games. And now I had to pay. I mean, I have Paramount because I get it for free. Mm-hmm. But, you know, people will say that it's only $5 for the month if you want to watch your team play. But for me, it's also I want to watch, you know, Thursday night was one of those times where you can watch whatever game it was. You know, or, you know, the primetime games were always available, all the games. And now they're making it less and less available for people overall. But
yeah, you mean, what do you mean by Paramount? Like Paramount doesn't show games.
No. Paramount wasn't it Paramount the one that did
Amazon?
The,
Amazon.
No. I'm sorry. I went off track. Not the Thursday night game, but Paramount had their own primetime game where you had to have. It was streaming only. You had to have Paramount Plus or something.
Oh, probably. Yeah, it was probably a one-time deal they did.
Yeah, it was a one-time deal. And if you wanted to watch the game, or no, they did a few games. But
I think they gave you Paramount. You could get it for free, though. Like, you could still download it for free. So it's not like people were incapable. They just didn't do it. So, no, I see what you're saying.
Yeah. But again, it's just making it harder and harder for people to be able to watch.
Yeah, there's just too many options. I mean, too many things you need to remember, to your point. Like, it's no longer the old days. It was just on CBS, ABC, and NBC. That was it. And then
if it was Sunday night, you knew where it was. If it was Monday night, you knew where it was. You know, it was easy. And see, that's the whole thing. I'm just too lazy to remember everything.
That's fair.
Yeah.
That's
fair. And also, like, Amazon controls. Like, if you see, like, they got to really work on all the controls for Amazon, because it just the navigation of it. There's like a major delay with Amazon too.
Hmm.
Yeah.
What do you mean delay? Like video feed delay or delay with?
Yeah, there's a video feed delay with Amazon.
If you watch it on regular TV versus, got it. Yeah. Well, it is a streaming service. There's always that delay. I agree. So.
Yeah. Sorry, I kind of went off the rails a few times.
Yeah. That's still about football.
It is.
So that's what you know. You didn't go too far off base here.
Well, I appreciate that.
Yeah,
thank you.
You know, I'm trying to be thoughtful.
You actually are. And it's kind of freaking me out.
So, going back to the NFL draft.
Yeah. Okay. Let's go back.
All right. Let me.
This year.
So there have been
we're
lots
talking about
of
this year's draft, right?
Yeah. This year's draft. There have been lots. You know, we're in the fourth round right now. I think right now, as we speak, actually, the fourth round draft picks are going off.
Right.
So being a Niner fan. You know, I come into the draft, and this is true, I'm sure, for any fan of any team. You have this belief. You have this thought about, here's what your team needs. And we'll ask you what you thought your Browns need before the draft happens, right? But my thoughts before the draft happened were like, okay, we need more offensive line. We definitely need more cornerbacks because that's one of the things that hurts us. It's the secondary. Yeah. And we can probably get another pass rusher because we just lost Eric Armstead, you know, lost a couple players, so we could use something like that. To me, those are like the core three, right off the bat. Core three. Our strengths in all the
wide receiver.
The strengths in all the skill positions are there. Like I don't need anything in those skill positions. Not at least it's my primary pick. So right off the bat, our first pick, we pick the Florida wide receiver. Now heading into the draft, I get it. There was talk about they might trade Ayuk or Debo. You know, people have been asking about him, and of course, Niners haven't signed Ayuk just yet.
Yeah.
But in my mind, I'm like, okay, that's great. But in reality, it shouldn't matter. Like. For the Niners,
that big of a need.
Yeah, it's like that's not a need at all.
I mean, they did get a DB. They did get a DB in the second round.
Sure,
right?
Granted,
yeah,
they got a DB right off the bat, but still, it's like, why did we get a wide receiver? They can't explain it. I mean, it's not as bad as obviously going up and getting a quarterback after you just signed one for 4 years like Atlanta, but and he'll play. Like the wide receiver is going to play. He'll get in,
right?
And but we didn't start addressing our needs till like later rounds. Now we got the cornerback, then we got the tackle. I think we just picked the safety up, you know. So that's good. They're addressing those needs, but like the only reason
first round pick was a little bit questionable.
Yeah, it didn't make sense. It's just like watching the Cowboys fuck themselves throughout the whole play, the whole draft, which is fantastic. Jerry Jones states from the beginning of last or during the free agency that, hey, we're going to really make a splash. They didn't do dick. And then he talks about the draft, and all they were doing was trading back. And what'd they get? A freaking tackle. They need a tackle. Then they get an edge rusher. Don't need an edge rusher much either.
Right.
And then they got another offensive lineman. I mean, don't get me wrong. Offensive linemen are key. If you want to be successful, you got to protect your quarterback.
Yep.
But they didn't pick up a linebacker until late after they just lost one. So, but the Cowboys are a different story. You know, going in, they're not going to address any other needs because they don't know what they're doing. As long as Jerry Jones still leads, and any Cowboy fan who disagrees isn't a lifelong Cowboy fan because they would know the reality. But that's the funny thing about the draft is like you go in, you know what the address needs are. And I guess sometimes you pick the best available player if they're that great. But that's not always the case. And I don't understand where some of these GMs come from. Like for the Browns, what were your thoughts going into the draft with the Browns?
Well, we still don't have a first. We don't get our first round pick until next year for the Watson trade.
Oh, right.
So we didn't start until the second round. But I was happy. I got a defensive tackle and a guard in the third round.
And those were your needs, right?
I think those were the major needs, is to shore up depth, because offensive line are what killed their season most last year, aside from just all the injuries, like getting Nick Chubb hurt and everybody else hurt. But what really did, we were starting at tackles, third and fourth stringers at tackle. Mm-hmm. And depth was just one of those things that killed us. And of course, we just had a shit ton of injuries, so that added to it. But having depth on our offensive line, like you said, it's, look, unless you have a quarterback who just, like a Mahomes, who can just, you know, do what he does, you need that offensive line. And also, same thing with running game. If you want to have a running game, and the Browns are a big running team, and that's the same thing with the 49ers. It's like Shanahan, everything is predicated off of the run. Everything about the 49ers offense revolves around being able to run the ball. You know, I mean, it's just how – it's this philosophy. And Stefanski is the same way. Like, everything comes off of running the ball. Yep. And regardless of, like, look, we have Nick Chubb coming back for an injury, and then you have CMC, but – for them to be as effective, you need to be able to get the line. So, but the funny part about what the Browns did is the tackle is from Ohio State and the guard is from Michigan.
Mm.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. And so
they actually play next to each other on the same side of the line.
Yeah. But they played against each other. You know, so there's going to be some shit talking when it comes to the, you know, the locker room talk between them.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's kind of funny that's how it worked out. But, I mean, they're both good players. The tackle is one of those tweeners. Like, he's not big enough to be, you know, there's like, is he? He's not really big enough to be a tackle in the NFL, and he's not really small enough to be a defensive end. You know, he's not that type of build. So it'll be interesting to see. The one thing is, you know, we have Schwartz as defensive coordinator, so he likes doing a lot of these different type of packages. So it'll be interesting to see what Schwartz does with them when it comes to on the line. But it will help having, you know, Myles Garrett next to him. You know, a little pressure off. He just has to just perform well. So we'll see.
Yep. But
so far I'm happy. I mean, aside from not having a first-round pick, I like the picks that they did, but it was definitely positions of need. So,
yeah.
So far I'm happy.
So what do you think so far? I don't know how much you've really followed the draft, but – like, who do you think has done a great job? Like, is there any team that comes out to your mind that you said, oh, yeah, they look like they could be making a big difference?
It looks positively. It looks like Houston has definitely been, like, that one that really boosted. I mean, you know, it just seems like they're the one that really has started filling up. I mean, having Shroud actually come up, you know, they gave him additional weapons and I think they also had a lot of draft picks. They of course had our additional first round pick. And they also have parlayed it. I know that they actually moved down in the draft a little bit to get more picks too. So I don't remember how many picks they had, but
they have eight picks. They've already, and they were all starting from the second round. They didn't have any first round picks this year.
Right, because they moved down.
Right.
Or did they move down, or did they trade out? Do they trade for a player?
They may have traded out. I can't remember specifically, but they definitely traded with Minnesota.
Because I think, I think from the pick that we gave them, it was the fourth. There was a fourth team. I can't remember. It was maybe it was Jacksonville. I think Jacksonville ended up getting. Yeah, that's the one. It went through. The Jacksonville pick went through Houston from us to Houston. It doesn't say, but it is a pick from us. Mm. But yeah, it looks like Houston definitely was just, you know, trying to get more picks, and I don't remember if they traded for a player. They might have.
But yeah, I mean, Houston's doing well. They're still building.
Yeah.
But they have eight picks. Now, on the flip side, the number one pick in the draft obviously was Caleb Williams, the Bears, and they got him and a receiver, which was smart. Plus they have Keenan Allen. They have some good talent. Whether or not it'll pan out, we'll see.
Right. It is the Bears.
Well, they have Kingsbury is the offense coordinator for this one.
Yeah.
Former Arizona coach. But it's funny, they only had four picks for the draft. They're like done. They only had four picks this year, and they got themselves obviously the QB wide receiver in the first round. They picked up a tackle in the third. And then I'm just looking right now. They picked up a punter here with their final pick.
Oh, they did. Oh wow.
Yeah. Got themselves a punter.
That's you get a number one quarterback and then you get a punter.
Yeah.
Kind of seems like lack of faith.
Right?
Yeah, the offense is moving.
Exactly.
So what do you think about Williams? What do you think?
So watching him in college, because I watched a lot of USC games, definitely in the last year alone and the year before.
Yeah.
So I didn't catch too much of him when he was back in Oklahoma.
Yeah, yeah.
So I heard, obviously, you know, his kid runs wild. Not wild, meaning he can get free and make plays, and that was good.
He has an arm.
He has an arm. My problem, or at least where I think he needs to strengthen coming up this year, will be like his decision making. Like, I didn't think in the pocket he makes good decisions. Actually, I don't even know if he makes great ones on the run either. He likes to play free.
College. Yeah.
Yeah. He likes to play free. He doesn't like to play in structure, it seems like. And I could be wrong, clearly, but at least from what I'd seen, when it was any structured plays, it was harder for him. He also tends to, I wouldn't say get defeated because I don't think he quits, but he just seems to struggle in bigger games, and he tends to fall off is what I've noticed. And he's had some great talent at USC. So I always kind of look at those quarterbacks who had all that great talent and struggle. Like, they're going to struggle in the NFL because they don't have that same talent versus quarterbacks who did so well, you know, had less talent, had to work harder to make it work for their team. They have a better sense of how to play within the NFL. Not saying they're like potential superstars, but they can at least be serviceable potential starters and whatnot. I mean, Brock Purdy obviously comes to mind because of Iowa State. He didn't have any real stud players, but he was able to play. And you can see it when he plays with the Niners. He knows how to hit the tight windows. He's still young. It was only his second year. And he's still learning, but I see those versus, you know, some guys who come from these big programs. Think how many of them struggle. I mean, how many big program quarterbacks, like some of the best quarterbacks I've seen in the years that were picked in the first round were from colleges you didn't expect. Look at Mahomes, Texas Tech.
I was going to say, Mahomes, everybody just assumed that it was a gimmick.
Yeah.
Texas Tech. It's a fair assumption because that's the hard part about the draft, right? Because I think I think with the NFL draft above any other big league is that it's so hard to evaluate a single player because there's so many variables. You can't look at team records. You can't look at, I mean, if you just focus on the offense, I mean, you're dependent upon other players. Right. I mean, so much. And then again, I think with talent-wise in college, there's a talent gap. If like a Joe Burrows, right? it's easy to look at him and say, he looks great. He looks great. Look who he had a fucking wide receiver when he was at LSU.
Right. Who did they draft?
Yeah, two top five receivers in the NFL right now were on his team that he was throwing to. You know, with right. Jefferson and, you know, but it's so hard because, but then you look at like a Williams and then there's so much to nitpick. It's just, but I agree with you. I think when you look at the big games, he wasn't that impressive. And then there's kind of like how he was his fade at the end of the year trying to protect himself while he's getting ready for the NFL, or was it indicative of the type of person he is? Because there's some things that were questionable.
Well, I mean, like, you have to look at the end of his junior year or his second year with USC.
Second year, yeah.
Right? He, towards the end, they struggled as well. And he struggled too. And was it him protecting in the potential that he goes to the draft? Right? Like, he didn't go to the draft. So,
right.
But that doesn't mean he wasn't contemplating it. Again, we don't know what he's thinking.
Of course.
It's pure speculation. But it's like, is he, to your point, like, did he hold up more? Didn't want to put himself in the line of fire. I mean, he didn't even play the last game, which the the quarterback they got coming up after him looks really good for USC.
He put up really good numbers against a good team. So, yeah.
Yeah. But I agree with you. I mean, I think, and that's the challenge.
It's hard to judge.
Well, it's like the scouts fall in love with players for no reason whatsoever. Like J.J. McCarthy. He didn't do shit stats-wise in Michigan. Yep. It's literally a running game. Now, if he's going to go be this whole game manager, which I hate because every quarterback manages a game. It's stupid. But if they're talking about if he's going to be one of those, like, I'm going to sit back and only do what I'm told to do and don't throw anything deep that can hurt us, then he might be successful. With Minnesota, he has the opportunity there. But it could be the same concept, right? Like,
right.
I think he's overrated. I don't think he showed anything. He had a good combine and a good pro day. People were like, oh, he can make all these plays. It's like it's always easy when there's no one there trying to tackle
him. Right, there's nobody there. Yeah.
And that's the same thing with Caleb Williams on his pro day. It's like, yeah, he's hitting all of his receivers. No one's on him. How hard is that? And I'm not trying to bash on Caleb Williams. It's only because he's the number one pick.
No, it's not.
Or the top person to compare against.
Yeah, because pro day is a stupid. Honestly, I think pro day is the dumbest thing for quarterbacks. It is the most useless thing to do.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't matter, how, like you said. You could throw like that all day. You can have the greatest arm talent in the world. I mean, anybody can train for that. But when you have 3 seconds to do it, when you're in a pocket, you have to make that recognition. You have to go through your progressions, all that shit. And you're doing that in 2.5 seconds. All the time, you know, not just with that time strip, but you're also having to drop back. You know, you're doing all that stuff. And so, and that, you know, I've always said, like, that's the whole thing. Quarterbacks, like, going back to like a Montana. You know, they always said Joe Cool, like he kept his cool. It's not that. I've always said it. They play that. Every play is the same to them. They don't feel the pressure. They don't change anything. And that's the whole difference between, I think, when you look at those top-tier quarterbacks, those top 3-5 quarterbacks in the NFL at any given time. It's when, you know, they just play the same way every time. They don't feel the pressure.
Right.
You know, they throw the same way. So, yeah, pro day is just, oh, great. Is it going to translate to the NFL? What happens when they have pressure? Is their mechanics going to break off? Are they going to make a bad decision? Because, look, right now the Browns have as our backup Jameis Winston. He's a prime example. He has all the talent in the world. If you look at all his touchdown passes, you know, the year where he went 30 for 30, you know, 30 touchdowns with 30 interceptions. Look at those touchdown passes.
Duplicated.
They were great. You can look at all those great throws he made, but also then those 30 interceptions.
Right.
You know, I mean, how do those look? You can't look at it like, oh, I'm only going to look at the yards he threw for and the touchdowns.
Right.
You know, when they make those mistakes, are they bad? And there's plenty of quarterbacks. Like, part of the reason why I wasn't big on Baker Mayfield when we finally let him go was it wasn't that he was bad, but at that time he was also – there was also parts of his game that just weren't stepping up. Like, he wasn't making always those right decisions when it came – when you needed that third and – like, it was 3rd and 6 in the fourth quarter. Because those are those big plays. Those are what defines – to me, defines those top-tier quarterbacks. It's 3rd and 6 in the fourth quarter. You need to get to keep this drive going. Can you make the completion?
Right.
And more often than not, unfortunately, he wasn't doing it. That was my big problem with him. He wasn't the reason why we're closing out games. But when you look at those top-tier quarterbacks, they make those throws.
True.
You know, and so, yeah, Williams and McCarthy, they can have those great pro days. But when it comes down to it in a game situation, are they going to be doing those type of throws? Those 30-yard passes are nice in a pro day. But it's those 6-yard completions, those are what win games. Everybody talks about Purdy with drop-offs, right? Yeah, it keeps the chains moving, keeps the drive going. It keeps them out, the offense on the field and defense off the field.
Yeah, I agree. You got to keep – yeah, the point is you want to keep the chains moving, right, to your point. Mm-hmm. And look, for some of these quarterbacks like Bryce Young, last year's number one, horrible, horrible. Now, is he horrible because he's incapable of playing the NFL? I don't know. It's hard to say because he was on such a horrible team.
Yeah.
Like, that's an example of where you should have had him sit while you build the offensive lineup and let him just learn and see how horrible his team is.
Put him in a situation where he can succeed.
Exactly. Right? Back to the Bill Walsh concept. But these GMs have no chance. I mean, plus the owner in Carolina is just crazy. So he got put in a bad position, and he may end up flaming out fast because of that. Or he may end up like a Sam Darnold, who, you know, looked
just good, never hit
because he also, well, part of the challenge is, and this was something Alex Smith faced back with the Niners back in the early in 2000s, was constant changes in offense coordinator. Right? No QB will be successful without stability. You need stability. They need to know the offense are going to run.
Especially a young one.
Yeah, it's going to be the same for the next 2 to 3 years. Like, they can't keep changing every year and being expected to learn when they're just learning the first one. Because it's so much more in the NFL, offensively, than it was ever in college. College is almost always about shotgun, and that's it.
Yeah.
Right? Nobody even plays under center anymore. Almost all of them are shotgun. And it's, which is dumb, because that's how they lose a lot of these precise plays.
Yeah.
Which is what the West Coast was always built on, right?
Right, right.
But yeah, he struggled. Bryce Young struggled. Now, Caleb Williams should have a good team around him, so I think he'll do okay. I don't think he'll light it up, but I think he'll do okay. J.J. McCarthy, if he ends up starting, which I think he will, I'm not sure. He has a good team around him, but they still struggled last year anyway without Cousins. So
he's just not – he was a good, solid college quarterback.
I think Jefferson is going to be the one most disappointed. So if you're doing fantasy – do not pick Jefferson because he's going to be impacted the most.
Yeah.
But
those opportunities.
Yeah. No. And the other quarterbacks that were picked, you had Jaden Daniels picked by the Commanders, who he's another one that people just said falling in love with. And I'm like, okay, I don't know if he's that good either, but we'll see. Drake May, same. Like,
Drake May is, I think he's a big question. Body. Yeah, he's a big body.
Yeah. I think he needs a lot of work still. The only guaranteed person I liked in the top five was Marvis Harrison Jr.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, if I were the Niners, that's what I would have traded Debo or Ayuk for, was trades for a number one with one of them and move all the way up and take Marvis Harrison Jr.
I hate the term generational talent, but he's just he's one of the few children of NFL star that looks better than his father.
You know, physically he is.
Physically he is.
Long lasting, we'll see.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you never know. But I mean, you go back to that whole thing of how often is generational talent thrown around? It seems every year
they try to
label somebody with that because they want the clicks. They want the views. It's every year. I mean, remember how much hype Trevor Lawrence had?
Yeah.
You know, of course he went into a dumpster fire to begin with, but you know, you come into these drafts and every year they got to anoint somebody as the next greatest, the next almost Hall of Famer at that point. And it's just crazy.
And I laugh when they keep saying Caleb Williams is the next Patrick Mahomes. No, he's not, for a couple reasons. One, he didn't have to fight like Mahomes had to. So he's been given everything, and not like personally given everything.
But, yeah, I know what you mean. The
accolades and everything have been given to him.
Right.
And he always played with these big programs. Oklahoma, USC.
So anybody,
there's a distinct difference between how your paths go in my mind. And that's why I call him the next Patrick Mahomes. If you're just saying he runs around a lot and throws the ball like Patrick Mahomes and has a strong arm, sure. Then yes.
The thing is, you can say that there's similarities in their play style.
Yep.
But anybody that even look, if you can actually be accurate when you say somebody can even be a starter in the NFL, a productive starter in the NFL, then you should be making millions of dollars as a GM.
Right.
Because even the best GMs in the world, you know, all the great GMs miss on like half their picks.
Oh, yeah.
You know, completely woof on it. You know, like even those top three rounds. Like there's always that whole idea that, you know, in the first three rounds, it's not a good pick unless they're a starter, right?
Right.
First three rounds, minimum, you should be a starter in the NFL. Not saying, you know, Pro Bowl or whatever, but you should at least be a starter or contributor to the team. But how many of them? I mean, you go back and just look at draft picks for the 49ers, even. Mm-hmm. And overall, Lynch has done a very good job. I mean, he's had a lot more hits than, but you can go through and see how many misses he's had.
Right.
And, you know, of course, you have to give it a few years, right, to see if they're, you know, if they're on the team still, if they're traded, if they're starting somewhere else. But, yeah, people who act like Caleb Williams is a lock to be Patrick Mahomes, dude, let's make sure he can actually be a starter in the NFL before you anoint him the best. You're basically saying that when he steps on the field, he's the best quarterback in the league.
Yeah.
And Mahomes still is the best quarterback in the league.
Agreed. And again, the thing for Caleb Williams is that it's less about him. It's more about the media, the unnecessary pressure they put on him and anointing him certain ways. If I'm him, I like his attitude. I love the kid's attitude, and I think he'll probably be fine, and I think he'll be a good quarterback because I think they're doing one thing they did right was they've been building or getting pieces for him,
right,
in anticipation of him. What they've screwed up is their quarterback is a lame duck quarterback or coach. Lame duck coach because it's his final year. So if they're gonna fire him, and this was something RG3 brought up, which I agreed with. Right. And he said Caleb Williams should say, "I don't want to go there," and obviously that didn't pan. That's not what happened. But his point was, his point was that he shouldn't go there because the organization itself is not stable, meaning the coach is an unknown. He has 1 year left; he could be gone. Right. And then if suddenly Caleb Williams is now dealing with a new coach next year, how is that any good? So he's not wrong. But hopefully Caleb Williams does well. Jaden Daniels, I think he's going to start in Commanders because they're just going to go straight up and start him, most likely, I would assume. Drake May will start. Drake May could sit because they got Jacoby Brissett. So maybe they try and have him sit. That would be the smart thing to do since he still needs some work. And then the other quarterbacks you have, like, what was it? McCarthy we talked about. Obviously, Penix we talked about. He's not going to play for the next 2-3, which, by the way, even if he starts in 3 years, he'd be 28, 29 years old by the time he starts. Because he's one of those kids who just came out, you know, older.
Right.
And nothing wrong with that, because that reminds me of a Florida State quarterback, Chris Winkie, I think it was, or whoever it was also another older quarterback who came out. And he played a few years in the NFL. And then, of course, the last quarterback was Bo Nix by Denver.
Yeah.
Which,
oh, wow. Yeah. Yeah.
You know, that one was a move up. Like they didn't move up. He was there, I think, at their point. So they just took him. But that's another quarterback. So you have six in the first 12, which is just crazy. And you had 23 offensive players picked in the first round. Most ever in the modern draft.
Yeah, it's an offensive league.
Yeah, so we'll see how the next few days go. Or well, today and tomorrow. And actually I think it's just today, right? There is nothing tomorrow. Just finish it all. So I guess the next big NFL thing will be the schedule release. And then I saw on the Pat McAfee show, I don't know if you watched that one.
I do.
He had Roger Goodell show up, and Goodell talked about he wants to get rid of preseason. Like he'd rather just make it 18
games.
At most. And even then, he doesn't even want those.
First game was horrible. I mean, it's already you could tell that they're not as prepared as they've been in the past. And maybe it's just the coaches have to adjust their preparation. Correct.
I agree. You know, I think the coaches that's part of it. But I don't disagree. Like, it's like college football. They just go straight into the season. But the games they play before league play are usually against, you know, opponents they should be able to beat, or they want to bring their program notoriety or whatever it might be. So that's sort of their preseason, because it doesn't count towards their conference. But still, it counts towards their overall record.
Right.
NFL, I don't disagree. I mean, to me, preseason is pointless because you're just seeing all the backups anyway. And with the money you pay to go to these games, granted, they're discounted for preseason compared to the regular season, but not like dramatically. And it's still like, if you just want to go to an NFL game, that's preseason is probably your cheapest option. No one wants to go and just watch all the backups. I want to go see the starters.
Remember, they're the same price, aren't they?
There's a slight discount.
Is there a slight discount? Yeah. I thought they were the same price. Maybe they changed that.
No, it's a slight discount. But regardless, the point is the amount you have to pay anyway, is it worth it, right? So, and I'd rather just go to a regular season game. So I'm actually on board with that one. If he wants to get rid of preseason, go straight to just regular season games, I don't see a problem with that.
This is, I mean, again, maybe it is really just coaches have to figure out a way to prepare for it better.
Yeah.
You know, like live practice, like actually,
Well, think about it. The preseason games they do have right now, to your point, like they cut back. They only have three right now.
Yeah, three right now.
And they didn't look good in the fourth. Well, the problem is because the coaches still didn't play their starters much.
Yeah.
Well, if you don't play your starters, then that's their first game time. Then, yeah, they're going to look like shit.
Right. Right.
So if they get rid of preseason, then they have to play the starters.
Yeah.
And maybe it's different. I don't know. It's hard to say.
Yeah, they're going to, like I said, they're going to have to change their approach just because, I mean, you don't, you could tell beginning of last year that it just took, and what's funny is like you think, okay, just get that one game, right?
Mm-hmm.
But it really felt like teams took like two or three games to actually get into the groove of the season. It really felt odd last year in the beginning of the year. Like, it just didn't feel like teams were actually, like, they got a really slow start. And you think just one game shouldn't do it, but maybe it's just a disruption in how they normally prepare for it.
Right.
Coaches just didn't make the adjustments for it. So, yeah, it's kind of weird. We'll see. But I'm not against it either. What I think is kind of questionable is 18 games. Right? Because once 18 games comes on, then you have to worry about, are we going to have a second bye? You know, how are you going to worry about going into the playoffs with players really hurt or really beat up after so many games? They already even said that, you know, the 17-game season is harder. And then what about records? Because now that becomes, you get to the point then where all those records that, like, we even thought, like, with Jerry Rice would never fall. You know, are falling. Two extra games is over a 10-year career is an extra season. You know, more than an extra season.
The Rams receiver, I don't know why, I can't remember his name from last year.
The new guy.
I'm thinking of Cup. So 2 years ago, he breaks Jerry Rice's record on the final game of the season when they had 17 games. It's like...
But nobody talks about O.J. Simpson having... Statistically, here's the thing. Here's the hard part about going again. It's no different than going against generations, right? Because O.J. Simpson had the highest in his year that he got to 2000. It was the highest per game total. But you can't just extrapolate and say, okay, he would have done the same thing over games 15 and 16 because, again, we aren't here. Would he have wore down in those last two games? And so it's a hard comparison. But yeah.
Well, and the rules were different back then too.
Right.
So, I mean, everything's changed. But no, I agree with you. It's hard, but it does bring in questions about records. I mean, think about it. The whole Roger Maris home run record always had an asterisk because he played in more games than Babe Ruth did to get that 61st home run.
Right.
You know, there will always be people who are going to complain. I think records are just fun. Like, they have no impact. It's just like when people say this person's greater than that person, that's a bullshit conversation because you can't justify that. Only you can justify is if you try to use stats, that's misleading because it depends on what the rules were then and what they focus on. And if you just try to say overall, they would have been better at this time than the others, or as JJ Redick once said, you know, players back in the 80s were playing and 70s were playing against guys who were like plumbers and whatnot, which is a completely jackass comment. Right. But you know, it's just not, it's from a player of his time having that arrogance about the previous generation.
He has that, but anyway, we won't talk about him.
Always has. He's a Duke player. But that being said, it's but yeah, no, I agree. You can't make those comments. One thing I wanted to say real quick before we end this and wrap this up, but back to the draft, is I'm also interested on the Jets because obviously they got Aaron Rodgers who's coming back. And I'm curious to see what they've been picking up. And so, unlike Green Bay, who always had Aaron Rodgers and never got him offensive help, here in the Jets, they started off, I think they got a tackle from Penn State.
Right.
And then they ended up getting a wide receiver and a running back. So far of their first, seven picks or eight picks that they have, I don't know how many they have, they've all gone offense. So it's smart. Like they know they haven't.
Well, they also know that his window is closing.
Well, he doesn't think so. He probably thinks he can go 2 to 4 more years. It depends.
You're right. I got to shout about that because I proved me wrong last, you know, in the beginning of this about the age of quarterbacks getting older. You think 38 is
they're much more relaxed. They're well protected. I mean, it's even the offense itself is well protected.
Yeah.
So
I mean, except for a quarterback who really relies on their athleticism, like a Cam Newton, right? People want to say that he can still play. It's like, yeah, but his whole game was predicated on the fact that he was a fucking linebacker who would run. You know,
kind of like passes and the plays. Yeah, he struggled.
Right. And when he had to be a pure pocket passer, he struggled. But I mean, Rodgers doesn't use like pure athleticism like that. So it's interesting.
Another great quarterback who came from a smaller program, Cal. Just back to the point about like just because they come from a big program where they were super successful doesn't mean they're going to be useful in the NFL.
Yeah,
I would go more with the mid-tier quarterbacks who played really well with what they had around them, knowing this talent wasn't there, and give them a better chance. But that's me.
Of course, anyway. People will say that the talent they're playing against is not good either. So it's but again, you can go through how many variables.
Jay Cutler was a horrible quarterback in college. He was a horrible quarterback in the NFL. Mm-hmm. Clear as day. Yep. Anyway. Well, hey, this was fun. Everybody enjoyed this little draft day coverage conversation that we kind of sprouted out into two different topics here and there.
Yeah, we're 3 or 4.
Yeah, it's fine. It's fine. Yeah. It's good. It keeps people alive when they don't know what the hell we're talking about.
We don't know what the hell we're talking about, so that's fine.
That's what matters most. Still come back and talk less and less about anything useful. Yeah. So, all right. Well, hey, everybody, thanks for listening. Hope you enjoyed this episode. And we'll be back again probably in 2 weeks because next week we won't be on. And I know, total inconsistency, but we'll get back to a rhythm soon once these college graduations, trips, and everything kind of end up.
Yep.
All right. So, everybody have a good one. And thanks for listening.
See ya.